Chapter 15. Geometry class just got much more interesting. Our quest to recover the lost secrets of the ancients appears to be nearly complete. Our biggest discovery has been that the three dimensions of space we see all around us, as the real world, is only half of the picture. The other half is a parallel reality in which all the rules are basically the same, but space over there is time over here, and vice versa. These two realities are intimately and totally dependent upon each other for survival. Their swirling movements blend together within every atom. Nature was never told that gravity shielding was impossible. It seemingly happens all the time in tornadoes, waterfalls, the stems of plants and trees, and certain insects' wing cases. Gravity appears to have much more structure in it than merely being a tug of war between the downward pushing gravity force and the upward pushing levity force. There are spiraling motions within gravity as well, which push in other directions besides strictly down. In order to cancel out gravity, achieve coherence, and enter into time-space, we have to know how to create the proper vortex currents in the source field so we can levitate, teleport, and travel in time, which may be a key part of the predicted golden age. Geometry appears to be the key to creating the vortex currents we need to achieve these stunning results. Geometric vortex points. It is entirely possible that certain areas on Earth could have greater coherence than other areas, thus making levitation, teleportation, and time travel much easier in those spots. Gravity may take on a spiraling, sideways push in these areas, creating circular or oval-shaped flow patterns in air, water, magnetic fields, or the mantle. Ivan T. Sanderson was searching for just such vortex points in the 1960s with his Society for Investigation of the Unexplained. Charles Berlitz actually made extensive use of Sanderson's library when he wrote The Bermuda Triangle in 1974. From 1945 to 1975, fully 67 different ships and boats and 192 aircraft of all different types disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle. As a result of these events, 1,700 different people vanished. These incidents do not include many other disappearances that were later given conventional explanations. In 2004, Gian Quasar revealed that in the preceding 25 years, 75 aircraft and hundreds of pleasure yachts vanished in the Bermuda Triangle without a trace, and on the cover of his book, he indicates that more than 1,075 people disappeared as a result. The Bermuda Triangle was only one of a series of locations Sanderson had found where strange things were happening. By the late 1960s, Sanderson had clearly determined that there were 10 areas on Earth, approximately equidistant, where ships and planes kept disappearing. Strange phenomena were seen in the sea and in the air, and/or equipment malfunctioned. 5 of these areas were on the same northern tropical latitude, and each one was 72 degrees of longitude apart from the next. 5 others had the same basic layout in the southern hemisphere, but they were all shifted 20 degrees to the east of the ones in the north. Almost all of Sanderson's network television appearances in the early 1970s discussed these vortex points, which created a great deal of mystery and intrigue. Well over 1,000 people had disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle alone, though Sanderson said there was nothing triangular about it. As a result of his popularity, military and commercial pilots began supplying him with even more interesting data. The pilots said that in these same 10 spots, or immediately near them, they were experiencing time anomalies, arriving at their destinations either much too early or much too late. This could be confirmed with their own instruments, as well as ground records. The Dick Cavett Show was extremely popular on ABC in the late 1960s and early 1970s. Arthur Godfrey was a frequent guest, a seasoned pilot who enjoyed 30 years as a television personality, often representing the view of the biggest aviation companies. A debate was set for March 16, 1971, between Godfrey and Sanderson about these 10 vortex points. Although they were old friends, in two earlier appearances, Godfrey skeptically dismissed Sanderson's idea as a lot of bloody nonsense, or something to that effect. Nonetheless, when Sanderson brought out the globe with the points clearly marked and laid out all the evidence, Godfrey was blown away. He had three different experiences in those same areas that directly confirmed what Sanderson was saying. In one case, Godfrey lost all radio and instrument contact for an hour and a half while flying through the Devil's Sea, south of Japan, with only 4 hours of gas to go, and he was clearly terrified. He also said that when pilots head straight down the East Coast over the ocean, which is faster than sticking close to the land, they have to keep a very watchful eye on their instruments. Other pilots had already said the same thing, including Bob Durant on Barry Farber's radio show. When Dick Cavett finally asked Godfrey flat out if this phenomenon warranted proper scientific investigation, he looked straight into the camera and with total deadpan seriousness simply said, "Yes." This triggered a wave of new interest from scientists and engineers. One of them pointed out that the North and South Poles should also be included, as they fit the same geometric relationships very nicely. Sanderson published a diagram of these 12 vial vortices, as he called them, in the April 1971 issue of Pursuit, his journal. He then got a huge new burst of publicity when his classic article, The 12 Devil's Graveyards Around the World, appeared in a 1972 issue of Saga magazine. This triggered a scientific investigation by three Soviet researchers, Nikolai Goncharov, Vyacheslav Morozov, and Valery Makarov, who published a paper about it in the USSR Academy of Sciences popular journal Kimia i Zhizhen, or Chemistry and Life. Their paper came out in 1973 and was titled, "Is the Earth a Large Crystal?" These three guys represented an interesting mix of talent. Goncharov was a historian, Morozov was a construction engineer, and Makarov was an electronics specialist. Together, they realized that Sanderson's 12 vortexes created an icosahedron when you connected the dots in three-dimensional space. This, again, is a roughly spherical geometric object that has 20 sides, each of which is a perfect equilateral triangle. They felt this was an energetic crystal structure of some kind that existed within the Earth. They referred to it as a matrix of cosmic energy. They also knew that when you turn the icosahedron inside out, you get its geometric opposite, called the dodecahedron, a 12-sided object that looks like a soccer ball, where each of the 12 faces is a 5-sided pentagon. They drew all the lines for where these geometries appeared over the surface of the Earth, based on Sanderson's 12 original points and found a wealth of hidden treasures. Many of the greatest earthquake-prone seismic fracture lines were directly on this grid. Undersea volcanic mountain ridges often lined up perfectly with the grid, including the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, as well as above-ground mountain ranges. All of these effects could be the result of natural spin currents in the mantle, where this sideways force of gravity pushes the molten material into cyclical flow patterns. The highest and lowest atmospheric pressure zones also appeared in some of the areas where any three lines crossed, of which there were a total of 62 places. Again, this could be caused by gravitational force affecting the behavior of the atmosphere via spiraling currents not yet acknowledged in mainstream science. These vortex areas formed the center points for major ocean currents and whirlpools as well, showing the gravitational effects upon the flow patterns of water. The areas of highest and lowest geomagnetic Gauss strength fit neatly within this geometry. Significant concentrations of ores and petroleum also appeared in these areas. Animals naturally followed these paths in their migrations. Unique wildlife appeared in these areas, and anomalies in the gravitational field. Best of all, advanced prehistoric cultures and ancient civilizations also showed up in these spots. In fact, fully 3,300 different sacred complexes and ancient monuments, often built out of massive stones, appeared on this grid. This included the Great Pyramid in Egypt, the ruins of Great Zimbabwe in Central Africa, Stonehenge and Avebury in England, the Pyramids of China in the Shan Province, the Kununda Stone Circle Complex in Australia, the ruins of Nan Madol at Pompeii, the mysterious stone heads of Easter Island, Machu Picchu in Peru, the Pyramids of the Sun and Moon at Teotihuacan in Mexico, the Four Corners area of the Hopi in the American Southwest, including Sedona, Arizona, and many more. This is very compelling evidence that the ancients built their gigantic stone monuments in the places where it was the easiest and also the most coherent, thereby making it much easier to shield gravity and also get much more powerful healing effects as well. It may even have been possible to use these points for time travel if you knew when the right planetary alignments would occur. William Becker and Beta Hagens further refined and enhanced the work of the Russian scientists, drawing lines that connected more of the geometric points together and created what may be the most advanced visualization of the global grid yet. In their classic work, The Planetary Grid, A New Synthesis, two different grid-related aircraft cases were given, where sudden and unpredictable course changes occurred without the pilot's control that fit the structure of the grid lines. The first involved KAL-007 out of Anchorage, Alaska, on September 1, 1983. The second was KAL-902, heading from Paris to Anchorage on April 20, 1978. Both these flights occurred during significant holidays in two different cultures. KAL-007 happened during a major Hindu feast for Vishnu, and KAL-902 took place during Good Friday, Passover. It is possible that certain ancient holidays were chosen for a reason. The Earth's alignment, as we move through the seasons, may have given atoms and molecules on Earth a little extra kick to get over the light speed boundary on these special days. Obviously, much more research is needed to confirm this speculation, and some holidays do not appear on the same day from one year to the next. but it's an interesting possibility. Ley lines and beyond. In the 20th century, Sir Alfred Watkins found that a huge number of architectural sites from all different historical periods appeared throughout England on straight-lined paths called ley lines. One in particular cut almost horizontally across southern England. I was delighted to find a BBC article in 2005 that soberly discussed these mysteries. Ley lines are alignments and patterns of powerful, invisible earth energy said to connect various sacred sites, such as churches, temples, stone circles, megaliths, holy wells, burial sites, and other locations of spiritual or magical importance, Harper's Encyclopedia of Mystical and Paranormal Experience. It is true that more paranormal activity is evidenced in these areas, including hauntings. Effects of this type of energy are said to be similar to those of static electricity, feelings of tingling on the skin, and hairs standing on end. A phenomenon often reported during investigations is that of technical equipment behaving erratically. Major prehistoric structures of higher importance can frequently be found to occupy locations where two or more leys intersect with each other. At the end of this article, there is a disclaimer saying it is user-generated content that does not represent the views of BBC Gloucestershire, just so there is no confusion. All of the effects they mentioned are a perfect match with what we've been learning about the source field. I was also greatly inspired by an article from Joseph Jachmans entitled Earth, a Crystal Planet, which appeared in a 1996 issue of Atlantis Rising and features some of the points I've already mentioned above. Jachmans revealed that many ancient cultures around the world had a unique focus on these ancient straight lines. The Irish called them fairy paths. The Germans called them holy lines. The Greeks referred to them as the sacred roads of Hermes. The ancient Egyptians called them the pathways of Min. The Chinese called them Lung Mei, or dragon currents, and believed that placing stones, trees, temples, houses, and pagodas along these lines would directly help the earth as part of the ancient practice of feng shui. The earth was treated in much the same way as the body would be healed, through the acupuncture lines. The idea of the axis mundi also fits in very nicely. If you have a major energy vortex in a particular land, that obviously would become the focal point for everyone, if enough people knew about it and could make use of its benefits. The Australian Aborigines called them dream paths, and would do seasonal walkabouts along these lines to re-energize the life force in those regions. They would map out the dream lines on boards called turingas and could locate game animals and predict the approach of storms by meditating on the lines. Ancient Polynesians called them telapa, or lines of light, and could apparently see them as visible, luminous lines in the ocean that they used for navigation. The residents of Easter Island and Hawaii called them aka threads and built the stone heads and sacred ahu platforms in Hawaii to harness the mane, or life power, from these lines. The Incas organized their entire civilization along cheque lines, building huacas, or sacred centers along the way, all of which converged at the Pyramid of the Sun in Cusco. The Maya built raised white roadways called sacbes that followed the lines with perfect straightness going right through the swamps to connect their pyramid complexes together. Medicine wheels and kiva circles in Western North America are also found in straight-line arrangements, and the mound builders in the Midwest and East Coast regions of what is now the United States also left their structures in curious alignments, again seemingly to harness the powers of this grid and the coherence it produces. Jachmans also said that Native American shamans often speak of healing energies from the earth they call Orenda, Manitou, and other such names. Interestingly, Jachmans also claimed that the Hopi elders said the earth was like the back of a spotted fawn. As the fawn gets older, the spots change positions, and new points appear.